and welcome to Twigged.
A light-hearted, plant-based podcast exploring some of the vegetal roots of history and folklore and what makes a decent snack. I'm Alex, a foraging and history enthusiast.
I'm Alice, and I'm here mainly for eating the plants, although not this week.
No, no, don't eat the one this week. Please don't. I guess it's worth pointing out that neither Alice nor I are experts in any of the things that we're talking about. We have access to some foraging books, the internet, and kitchens?
Kitchens? That's the level of expertise.
All that to say that this week we're going to talk about mistletoe. Did you see anything about how like the seeds look like sperms?
No. Oh, I
that's something
that.
I saw. I think that was on Wikipedia, and I
know someone may have made that up.
We live in a post-fact world, don't we? It doesn't. We can do
yeah,
whatever
I mean,
we
it's
want.
It's not really important anymore. Just think whatever you want, and that can be a fact.
It's a fact that it came out of your mouth.
Exactly. Yeah. Some people are saying that mistletoe is like sperm.
Shall we move on to some really nice and dry facty facts?
Yes, please. We are going to have a lot of editing to do.
Great. So mistletoe is actually like a catch-all for a bunch of different plants, the word mistletoe. It's not one specific thing.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So it's a bunch of different hemiparasitic, which means semi-partially parasitic plants in the order of santalales or santalales, santalales. Uh-huh. Either way, the word Santa's in there, so that's exciting. I was like, Santa! And the one we're really talking about because we live in the UK is the Viscum album, and it's native to the British Isles and most of Europe. But there are a few other ones. There's a more southern European one in southwest Spain, Portugal, Morocco, southern Africa, called the Viscum cruciatum. And then there's one in North America, which isn't really as closely linked to the other two. It's not a Viscum. It's the Phoradendrum leucarpum. It's different. We're not talking about that one. So
it's a long Latin word that means a lot of things to some people and nothing to others.
What else can you tell us about the name, Alice?
Nothing. I don't know anything about the name.
You sent me something about the name, about what mistletoe means.
Oh, no, it's like a test. Oh, okay. Very good. Let's see. Original name was mistletan. And mistle comes from the Anglo-Saxon word for dung. And tan means twig. So that kind of means dung on a twig, which ties in really nicely to the Twigged podcast.
Lovely. Why would it be called dung? Like, it's not really brown. It's kind of quite greeny. This brings us very nicely onto our next segment, which is to describing it.
Yeah, great.
The leaves are symmetrical and they kind of look like quite thin tongues.
They kind of almost have like a droplet shape.
Yeah. I saw them described as strap-like.
Yeah.
They're kind of long and rounded.
In one picture that I'm looking at least, at the end of every little tiny twig, there's a little pear.
Oh, yeah. I think that's it. They always grow in pairs and they've got thin little stems with forked branches and then pairs of smooth, kind of leathery leaves. I don't know that I've ever touched mistletoe. I wanted to find some before we did this, but I never leave my home.
Yeah, so. I can't find any.
And the berries are really pearly looking, aren't
they? Yeah.
Very opalescent?
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Pearlescent, I
Almost
guess.
Almost see-through, yeah.
Yeah, they're beautiful. Let's talk a bit about the cool. So, like, if you want to find mistletoe, you basically, I think, always have to look up because it grows up in other trees because it's a semi-parasite.
I was, like, really amazed when I found out that mistletoe is a parasite that just grows on loads of random stuff.
Oh, my God, it's so cool.
Sucks its water. I was like, oh, my God.
I know. And it's one of those things that, like, if you found that out about an animal, it would be so gross.
Yeah.
But because it's a plant, we feel like removed enough that we're like, oh, yeah, sure, it's a parasite.
Yeah, we're like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
I think it can grow on all sorts of different, I think it usually chooses trees to grow on, and the most like common ones that you will see it on are hawthorn, poplar and lime.
Oh, I saw apple trees as well, apparently. It's super, it loves being up an apple tree.
Oh, sorry. In the UK, most commonly cultivated apple trees. There we are.
I found the parasitic stuff really cool. So basically, birds either poop them out onto a tree or...
Oh, really?
Yeah, or they sometimes, they eat the flesh around the seed, and then because the seeds are so sticky, they like wipe their beaks on the tree.
Oh, I see. So it's kind of accidental that they end up growing off other trees.
Yeah, except for the seeds are super duper sticky. So once they're put on a tree, either pooped or wiped onto a tree, then it's really difficult for them to get kind of booted off because they're super, super sticky. And then they start to grow. And at first they're only semi-parasitic. They're able to produce some of their own food stuff. They have chlorophyll in them.
Mm-hmm.
And then as they grow, they have a haustorium, which is like a root kind, a root-like thing.
Oh, wow.
That instead of growing into the ground, then starts burrowing into the tree until it taps into the tree and they get their water and minerals and nutrients from the tree. It's cool.
Yeah.
And you can see there are photos of cross sections of this root thing kind of growing into the tree. And if you, it's a bit like an illness in a human, where if you want to chop something, if you want to operate and get rid of it, you have to make sure you get every last bit, because otherwise it can come back.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
I think I read that it, like, it doesn't kill the host. Obviously, like, it needs the host to be alive to live off it. So it's not going to completely overtake it, but it can weaken it. I guess if it grows and grows and gets a bit out of control, it'll take all of the, like, nutrients and water that it needs.
Yeah, I think from what I saw, the end of its life tends to coincide with the end of the host's life.
Oh.
Like it might eventually, if that, because you can get a bunch of different mistletoes growing in one host.
Yeah.
And if there are too many, eventually it can die. And then the mistletoes, by the time they've sapped everything out of it.
Wow. That is kind of creepy, isn't it? Like, that's something that would be in a weird horror film.
Yeah.
It's sucked everything it can out of the host and now they're both going to die.
I'd watch it.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
Yeah.
Let's make a film. We could just do some footage of pretty mistletoe berries and then play some like really ominous music in the background.
Bum, bum, bum.
Sorry, right. Ignore me.
No, ignore me. Let's ignore everything. Let's go to bed. Right. While we're on this topic, so you mentioned some trees that it grows on, but it very, very, very rarely grows on oak trees.
Okay.
Which is interesting because there's some history written by Pliny the Elder about this druidic ceremony involving mistletoe specifically growing in oaks. So it's kind of like exactly what we picture druids in our imagination.
I don't know how I picture druids in my imagination.
Well, did you ever watch Asterix and Obelix?
A very long time ago, yeah.
Okay, so they have... Okay, wait. I'm going to explain the ceremony first, and then I'll get to childhood television. So Pliny the Elder wrote about the ceremony of the oak, which was a druid priest dressed in white would climb up an oak tree and cut down the mistletoe with a golden sickle.
Yeah.
And then the mistletoe would fall to the ground, but it had to be caught in a white cloak, because if it touched the ground, then its magical properties would be ruined.
Oh, yeah.
And they would bring two white bulls. So they got there with their two white bulls, everyone dressed in white, or the priest anyway dressed in white. Then they'd sacrifice the two white bulls. And then, so Pliny said they would drink a concoction as an antidote to poisoning and against infertility. And I think it was partly infertility in livestock, but it might have also been infertility in people.
Okay.
But it's unclear what the concoction was exactly. So I don't know if they'd make something with the mistletoe, which seems dangerous because it's quite poisonous, or
yeah,
if they drink like the bull's blood, or if they'd mix the two together. In my mind, they mix the mistletoe and the bull's blood, but that's because I like things that are quite like gross and creepy.
Yeah, gruesome.
Yeah. And in Asterix and Obelix, the druid in it, I don't really remember this, but he goes around in white robes with a golden sickle cutting down mistletoe. sometimes.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. And he does he makes a potion, and there's like one episode where he makes a potion and makes the Gaulois army really strong, and then they beat the Romans.
Oh, wow.
Welcome to Plants, History, and Cartoons.
So niche.
I feel like we've already done this, but I'm going to ask the question because I like it, and we got to do it. Alice, can you eat it?
No.
No. Please don't. Did you look up what it does to you if you try?
Yes. Can I remember? I know it can give you an upset stomach.
That's basically, I think it's a lot of things that come with upset stomach, like diarrhea, nausea, vomiting, blurred vision, I saw. In super extreme cases, you can have cardiac issues, even cardiac arrest. And so it's, avoid. Best.
So definitely, definitely don't eat it.
There was a thing, I think it was on Wikipedia, where they were like, it's especially dangerous as a tea. And I was like, what? What do you mean especially? Who's like, I'm going to test all the most dangerous ways to ingest this. And it turns out tea made me feel the worst.
Someone's sitting there with a chart of being like, today I had it in tea and I was especially sick. So,
but it did. So don't eat it. Don't 100% don't eat it. But historically, it has been used as a medicine in some places.
Yes.
Yes.
That's my, I'm being sensible and not talking about crap at the moment, voice. I was going to say that it was, I don't really know about the effectiveness of this, but because it behaves like a cancer in the way that it takes over other plants and trees and the way that you have to like get all of it away for it to completely not come back and then grow again, it itself behaves very much like a cancer, and then it can be used to treat cancer in people in like alternative cancer treatment. I have no idea.
Oh, I saw that. But I saw that it was used. I think in the thing that I said, it said there had been some improvements in people, but it was probably not from actually the mistletoe. It was.
Oh, okay.
Well, I think people weren't hedging all their bets on the mistletoe. And apparently in some cultures, it's been used as an external medicine. So I think it was for broken bones, but I don't really remember now. But I guess maybe making a poultice or something. So it was used probably as an external poultice. It has been used to try to treat cancers and, yeah, the Druids and probably other people as well. But definitely the Druids used it as a fertility. For fertility.
Yeah.
Period. Yeah.
So I read that people all the way back to medieval times would hang the mistletoe in their doorways to protect them from like witches and ghosts, and that the Druids and was it Norse peoples? Is that right?
Yeah, possibly.
The Druids and the Norse peoples would hang it up in their doorways all year round to protect against like infertility, fire, basically any illness or disaster that could possibly come their way. So we have been hanging it up in doorways for a long, long time. Only now, obviously, it's not really for any of those reasons.
Just for kissing.
Just for kissing. But how we got from the fire to the kissing, I'm not sure.
Yeah, so we only tend to have it around in the holiday season, but it used to be that people might put it up, people would put it up in the winter.
Okay.
Because it's one of those things, like so many things, that was originally probably associated with the winter solstice, but then got kind of taken into the Christmas lore because it was easier to incorporate existing traditions into the celebrations than to be like, no, you're not allowed to do all your stuff anymore. You have to now only look at Jesus.
Yeah.
look at him.
Let's just put the mistletoe with the Jesus and then they'll look at the Jesus. Okay.
Except apparently in some churches for a while, and I don't know if it still happens, they did outlaw mistletoe in churches for a while in some churches.
Oh, okay. Because of the pagan connections.
Yeah. Oh. But yeah, so it was probably around for the winter solstice and then they sucked it into the Christmas celebrations.
Yeah.
Also, really interestingly, the reason we do it now probably is because the Victorians were super into the Druids.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Like so much of what we do now and so much of how we celebrate the holidays has to do with how the Victorians did it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we are basically copying what they were doing, which was copying what they thought the druids were doing.
I wonder what the druids were really into.
Just reality TV. There are different traditions to do with the kissing. Did you see any of those?
So all I know is that when you like meet people in the festive season, you're supposed to kiss under the mistletoe for good luck.
Yeah, so there are a couple of different ways to do it.
Okay.
Oh, yes. So kissing under the mistletoe, I found a bunch of different dates when it's supposed to have started.
Yeah.
It seems like no two places I looked had the same answer. One place said that the first recorded instance of it was in the 16th century. One place said like the first recorded instance was the 18th century. Some say it's ancient, an ancient tradition. So at some point prior to the current now, it started. And then the Victorians were super into it. Apparently, in some places, if you met someone under the mistletoe, you had to kiss them.
Okay.
Which I think raises some consent issues. There was another way of doing it that if you met someone under the mistletoe, you had to kiss. But every time that happened, you had to pluck one of the berries off.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. And once all the berries were gone, the kissing fun had to stop and all the kisses had been exhausted. So you wanted to get one that was like really full of berries.
I bet this all started because there was just this creepy guy who used to hang out under the mistletoe and he was like, oh, well, you have to kiss me until all the berries are gone. It's that guy. It's that creepy guy who started all this.
I mean, I feel like you get that guy at every party.
He was a druid.
Since the druids, there's always been that guy. Don't be that guy. But in modern days, it's also not always to do with kissing.
Yeah, mistletoe. I saw that.
In some places, like in France, it's a symbol of peace and friendship and good luck.
Yeah. And I saw that in France, they tend to like give it to their friends and family around New Year's, whereas over here in the UK, we have it more as a Christmas thing.
Yeah, which all makes sense because it's all really originally part of just wintertime celebrations and trying to get through winter with a bit of cheer.
Yeah.
So you take whatever is green at this time of year and you stick it in your home and you go... Thank God. Something's not dead. And there's a really good story from Norse mythology about mistletoe being a symbol of peace and friendship.
Awesome.
Yes. Awesome.
I would like to hear that story, Alex.
Would you not like to tell that story, Alice?
No.
Well, why don't we tell it together? We could try going back and forth on it.
Okay. So Frigg had a son called Balder. And was there like a premonition that Loki was going to kill Balder? Or was she just afraid that Loki would kill him?
I think she was having premonitions or like visions that he was going to die and be killed.
Okay.
So she was quite, yeah.
So I think Frigg tried to... Frigg is a great name, isn't it?
Such a good name.
Frigg tried to remove everything that could possibly be harmful from anywhere near where they were. So I guess she removed all the obviously dangerous things and obviously very poisonous things.
Oh, that's so interesting. I read that she got them all to swear an oath not to harm him.
Oh, I see. Okay, I read somewhere that she removed them all.
Oh, interesting.
So she did away with like everything that she thought was possibly going to be a danger to Balder. And then she kind of overlooked the mistletoe because it was seemingly small and insignificant and she didn't think that it could possibly cause him any harm. But then it was the mistletoe that Loki actually used to kill Balder. How did he do it? I can't quite remember.
Oh, in the one that I read, that's so interesting. I love it. Well, because of course it all comes from secondhand and different interpretations. So the one that I saw was she got every living and inanimate object on Earth to swear not to harm him.
Oh, that's cool.
But she didn't think of asking the mistletoe because it doesn't grow from the ground. So she forgot about it.
Because of the parasitic nature of it. Yeah,
exactly. And then Loki tricks Baldur's blind brother Hod into killing him with a weapon usually described as an arrow made out of mistletoe.
Oh, wow. Okay. And I have no idea why Loki wanted to kill him. But like you said in the last podcast, sometimes they just do. The gods just decide.
They're kind of dicks.
Yeah.
Did you see in the one that I read, then Frigg's tears are mistletoe berries.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, or mistletoe berries are her tears, maybe.
Okay.
Makes more sense, I guess. And then she decided that instead of punishing everyone for what had happened, the mistletoe would now be a symbol of peace and friendship. That's nice.
Yeah, it's uncharacteristic of gods. Normally they're very vengeful. But in this one, she was like, just, oh, because I'm very sad that my son is dead, I'm going to fill the world with peace instead.
I think that's a really sweet story. Not the bit where someone takes advantage of the fact that one brother doesn't have the ability to see to get him to kill his own brother. That's a really, that's terrible. Bad Loki. But it's quite a nice ending.
Yeah, at least it's hopeful.
Yeah. Let's end on that note of like hopefulness. Yeah. It is a very positive plant, I think, with the exception of the fact that it's poisonous, don't eat it. And
the fact that it's a parasite. Like, strangely, considering those facts, it's like got lots of positive connotations and it's, it's quite nice.
Yeah, as long as, you know, no one creepy is forcing you to kiss.
I guess the negative connotations are the amount that it's overused in pop songs.
Yeah. But like Christmas pop songs are by and large terrible, no matter what they're talking about.
You just got to embrace the cheese.
Yeah, well done choosing this one. This was top-notch suggestion.
Although I did choose something that I can't eat, which is strange.
Yeah, obviously we're not going to do any recipes for this plant because we're not trying to kill you. And if you want to email us about plants or history or, you know.
Or request a topic.
Oh, yeah, if you request a topic or if you've got an excellent recipe you'd like us to share, we can do that. Our email is twiggedpodcast@gmail.com. And we've also now got an Instagram account, which is @twiggedpodcast. And we're planning to do about one post a week, so we won't spam you. It'll just be like a nice little plant-based or twigged podcast-based thing in your feed every once in a while. Great. So thanks so much for listening.
Yeah, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it.
Next episode will be something
wintry, maybe this time edible.
That would be good. Tune in next time for another episode of Twigged. I'm Alice.
I'm Alice.
Oh no! We're both Alice.
I should have just said I'm Alex and we should have gone with it and no one would have noticed. You don't know your name.
I said it with such enthusiasm.
And I didn't even notice.